This is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the October 1st edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Tuscola School Board. School Board accepts $50,945 in donations by Ben Crane. The Tuscola School Board accepted $50,945 in donations at their meeting on Monday night, much of which came from previous pledges to support the school's scoreboards with advertising consideration. Trust Bank, 217 Incorporated, and Wabash Valley all donated $10,000 for the scoreboard, $6,000 from Longview Bank and Omni each, $2,500 from Scooter's Coffee, $1,500 from Loman Ray Insurance, also for the scoreboard. Janet Boyer Living Trust donated $325 for North Ward Kids, $250 from an anonymous donor for SADD, $200 from an anonymous donor for Help a Child, $125 from Decker Family and Clapper Family for FFA, $25 for the Myrtle Easton Memorial for FFA, $500 from Bruce and Pat Noffritz for Chorus and Band each, $110 from Cheryl and David Bosarth for Cheer, and $3,010 on behalf of Pat Pierce for Football. The board also approved the minutes of the last meeting and bills in the amount of $1,779,000. The only agenda item during the meeting was the approval of an administrative cost resolution. Superintendent Gary Alexander explained that if costs rise above 5%, which the district has risen to 6%, the board must pass the resolution. Alexander continued, explaining that the rise stems from general rising costs and his retirement salary. An interim principal, Jordan Lawyer's North Ward report, she reported that Tiger Trot is quickly approaching, slated for October 10th. She also thanked the police and fire department, as well as the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, for their attendance during the school's Patriot Day Assembly on September 11th. In East Prairie, Principal Jared Van Osdell's report, he reported that the first gaming club meeting was a great success with a huge turnout. He also said the fire drill went well and that Builders Club had 40 students sign up. Tuscola High School principal Justin Bozar reports that he congratulated the 10 seniors who earned parking spots for being top 10 scoring seniors on the ACT. In no particular order, they are Dane Manning, Reader Manning, Claire Leonard, Lainey Yadis, Bella Taylor, Logan Kurtz, Seth Stoller, Regan Willoughby, Braxton Moody, and Austin Jones. After closed session, the board approved the resignation of Jacob Earle as custodian and Kyle Snyders as educator, and approved the hiring of Kelsey Anderson as assistant scholastic bowl coach at TCHS, Austin Alexander as custodian, Brian Thomas as 5th-6th Eco Meet sponsor, Phil Weinecke as the 7th-8th Eco Meet sponsor, Terry Fleming as student council co-sponsor, Andy Romine as spelling bee sponsor, and the transfer of Addie Tinkleton High School beginning the next year. The next article, Villa Grove City Council, review insurance policy and park updates. The Villa Grove City Council held its monthly Committee of the Whole meeting on September 22nd, beginning with the Pledge of Allegiance before hearing department reports. City Administrator Jackie Athey told the council she and other attendees at the Illinois Municipal League, IML, conference found the sessions informative. She added that future notices of meeting changes will continue to be posted on the city website and will also be published in the local paper starting October 1st. Community Programs and Services Director Jim Ree reported that Richmond Park had recently hosted its first cross-country meet, drawing 31 junior high runners. Several coaches praised the course, and Ree said he hopes to add high school meets beginning in 2026 season. He also noted that a flowering hibiscus tree was planted at the community center entrance in memory of Rosemary Reske. Junior high girls basketball is set to begin, and usage of the recreation center has remained steady, he added. Public Works Director Mark McSell informed the council that the generator at the Public Safety Building had been repaired and would be tested at upcoming fire department meetings. McSell said all the trees included in the original bid had been filled with the city employees removing the stumps, and crews continued defoliation efforts at the John Leon Reservoir. He plans to seek bids for electrical work tied to the reservoir's new diffuser. McSell also noted that 5 additional trees need removal, and he will work with the contractor to secure a quote before the next council meeting. Police Chief Jonathan Tibbetts reported that the new squad car had received its markings and that Motorola was scheduled to resolve an electrical issue. He said the department's newest officer is progressing well in training, and another officer who had been injured has returned to duty. Mayor Derek Rasmussen said he attended a productive session of the IML conference, including one where about 90 mayors supported requiring groups that use city property for events to carry liability insurance. Alderman Tony Hooker said he wanted the city to continue encouraging groups to host events because of the economic benefit to local businesses, though the council reached consensus to require insurance coverages moving forward. Hooker also asked that clear rules be drafted to govern who must carry the insurance, which received unanimous support. Rasmussen added that he had spoken to the city's ice rink vendor, who quoted a rental fee of approximately $5,900. The council agreed to proceed with Alderman Andrew Falk, noting the rink has been a well-attended, great event. The council then turned to another business. Trick-or-treat hours were tabled until Director Rhee consults with the local VFW, which hosts the annual costume contest. Members also discussed condemning two properties deemed unlivable, with further research required before action is taken. A request from resident Jacqueline Joins to have Villa Grove participate in the nationwide America 250 program was reviewed. Kathy shared details from an email suggesting possible events such as themed movie night to tie into the celebration. Hooker asked whether Joins might meet with the council to share more ideas. Finally, members discussed setting a clear policy for travel reimbursement. Alderman Christopher Elston suggested adopting rates published in the GSA.gov website rather than reimbursing by receipt, and the council agreed. Finding no further business, Elston called for the adjournment at 6:54 p.m. The next article, Moody, Fu Feng Collapses Underscores Challenges and Opportunities for the Tuscola Side, by Ben Crane. Douglas County Economic Development Corporation Executive Director Brian Moody said the collapse of negotiations with Fu Feng Group over the proposed corn wet milling facility in Tuscola illustrates both the challenges and opportunities of landing large-scale industrial projects. In an interview, Moody emphasized that while the deal ultimately fell through, Tuscola and Douglas County were leaders approached the process in the right way. I feel pretty confident that everything he did was right on approach. The tax agreement, our different discussions and engagement, I thought it was all very positive, Moody said. We did a good job of basically getting everyone together and being able to have the taxing bodies interact and some of the representatives interact with the company several times. Moody said that after 20 years in economic development, he has learned that mega projects, those north of $500 million in capital investment, are inherently complex and difficult to finalize. The frustrating part is you have it all lined up and everything together, and then before the deal is totally finalized and everything's signed, there's always a point where you're just a little nervous of what can pop up and what can be the issue, he said. For local farmers and officials, the project carried two clear attractions: guaranteed market for an estimated 25 million bushels of corn annually, and the development of an industrial site that has operated successfully for decades. They were going to buy 25 million bushels of corn on an annual basis, Moody said. Especially today, that would be a very welcome thing in our local ag markets. Some observers pointed to political pressures surrounding Chinese investment as a potential factor in Fu Feng's withdrawal. U.S. Representative Mary Miller has been a vocal critic of Chinese land purchases, but Moody said his interactions with her regarding the project was really pretty positive. The unique aspect here, and why we felt like they're going to move forward somewhere, is the place to do it because we had the industrial site, he said. Despite the setback, Moody said the process generated positive exposure for the site and interest from other developers. It's just a fact that we became a noted thing, and there was some press coverage. It drew some people in to take a look, Moody said. Our secret sauce has always been, if we could just get the prospects here, we could make the case. Moody highlighted Tuscola's infrastructure advantages: rail access, highway connections, water supply, and a robust natural gas system as factors that will continue to attract prospects. He praised Lionel Bazell, the property's owner, as a motivated seller eager to see the site redeveloped. We have a good site here and we'll step back to the plate and see what we get and see if we can turn it into something, Moody said. We'll move now to the obituaries. Adeline Young, 87, of Arthur, passed away at 10:40 p.m. Sunday, September 28, 2025, at Haven of Arcola. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 4th, at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Sullivan. Visitation will be held an hour prior to the service Saturday at the funeral home in Sullivan. Burial will be in Greenhill Cemetery, Sullivan. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Arthur First Baptist Church. Bernadine Castile was called to heaven at 4 a.m. on September 25, 2025, to be with her Lord and join her loving husband, Charles. Visitation was Wednesday, October 1st, at Reed Funeral Home, Sullivan. A celebration of life service for Bernadine followed. Interment was in the Greenhill Cemetery in Sullivan. Alan J. Hedinger, 72, of Tuscola, passed away unexpectedly on Monday, September 22, 2025, at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Massive Christian burial was held on Monday, September 29th, at 40 Martyrs Catholic Church, Tuscola. Burial followed at the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation was held Sunday, September 28th at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home in Tuscola. Haley Yeager Cummins passed away peacefully on Sunday, September 21st, 2025 at 10:26 p.m. at Willow Breeze Hospice House in Mattoon. She was 39 years old. A celebration of Haley's life will be held on Saturday, October 11th from 12:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. at 675 North County Road, number 1800, Camargo, just the way she wanted, laid back, cozy, and full of fall spirit. Please dress comfortably and for outdoor weather. Another article, Villa Grove's forestry team places 10th in state competition, by Emma Elston. On September 27, five students from Villa Grove FFA chapter traveled to Southern Illinois University in Carbondale to compete in the state forestry competition. The five students had competed in the Section 17 Invitational Competition in Monticello the week prior and had placed second in the section. The five were chosen by the chapter's advisor to participate at the state level. Forestry contests consist of seven parts: tree identification portion of the competition, which is what the contest is mainly known for, requires contestants to identify tree species. Next is the equipment identification portion, which is where contestants identify different pieces of equipment related to forestry. The forestry disorders portion has contestants identify disorders. Not all of the disorders can be seen by just glancing at a tree, so contestants look at picture of different disorders. The maps portion of the contest has contestants identifying different attributes of maps, such as elevation, longitude, and latitude, and distance between two points. Timber cruising is where the contestants find out the diameter and height of a tree by using tree scale sticks. There's another portion of the contest, but its category changes every year. This year, the category was chainsaw, which had contestants identify different parts of a chainsaw and chainsaw defects. Finally, the last portion is a general knowledge exam, which tests contestants on different aspects of forestry. The chapter placed 10th out of 18 teams in the competition. Sophia Shaw, senior, led the team at 16th place individual. Ethan Parr, 7th grade, came next at 50th. And Lily Davis, junior, immediately followed at 51st. Graham Hudson, freshman, came next at 57th, and Emma Elston, freshman, capped it off at 72nd. The next article, Harvest to Home returns October 10th through the 11th, a living celebration of the harvest season. The Illinois Amish Heritage Center invites you to celebrate the richness of the harvest season at Harvest to Home, a fall harvest experience, Friday, October 11th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, October 11th from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. just off Route 133 between Arthur and Arcola. This immersive two-day event offers a rare opportunity to step into the past and experience farming the way it once was, powered by steam, gas, horses, and hard work. It's a celebration of rural heritage, agricultural roots, and the community spirit that defined the harvest season for generations. If you remember harvests that shaped your childhood, or you a parent who wants to provide hands-on learning experience with something that they might not get to experience at any other time, Harvest to Home is where the past comes alive, said David King, executive director of the Illinois Amish Heritage Center. This event is more than a demonstration. It's a living celebration of the harvest, one that honors the hard work of our Amish ancestors and invites today's families to experience it together. Harvest to Home features oat thrashing powered by a 10-horse team, corn harvest demonstration using vintage pickers and hand-checking stations, a working grist mill turning corn into meal and livestock feed, corn shocks and shredding, sawmilling and buzzsaw, horse-powered sorghum pressing and cooking, apple butter and cider made on site, traditional trades including broom making, rope making, blacksmithing, and horseshoeing. Families will enjoy plenty of hands-on fun, including a petting zoo, pony cart rides, horse and buggy rides, and engaging activities for kids of all ages. On Saturday morning from 7 to 10 a.m., guests can enjoy a hearty country breakfast featuring pancakes, sausage, and liverwurst. Whether you work the land today or grew up hearing stories from someone who did, Harvest to Home is a place to reconnect with the soil, with tradition, and with each other, added King. Children 12 and under are admitted free. For more information, visit www.illinoisamish.org. The next article, Colonel Larry Eisnogel retired to receive U.S. Army War College Outstanding Alumni Service Award, by Marty Yeagle. Retired Colonel Larry Eisnogel, United States Army, Arthur High School graduate, class of 1967, and a member of the Arthur High School Hall of Fame, was recently notified that he would be receiving the U.S. Army War College Outstanding Alumni Service Award for 2025. The ceremony is set for November 13th at the U.S. Army War College in Pennsylvania. Larry is a member of the United States Army War College class of 1996. As described in the press release, this award is given to U.S. War College graduates who distinguish themselves through extraordinary achievements and contribution to their community or country. This award is intended to honor graduates for demonstrated service following the government service that was their source of attendance at the college. There is no requirement the nominees be retired from follow-on positions. Rather, the spirit of the award is to recognize the selfless service that graduates voluntarily participate or recruited to accept that makes a substantial difference in the lives of others. Colonel Ice Nogle was nominated by Mary K. Elder, Major General, U.S. Army retired, who in her letter gave the summary of Larry's career and the years following his retirement from the Army. Throughout his over 40 years of service to his country in uniform and as a civilian employee, Colonel Ice Nogle has served as a role model, a leader, an advocate, and a public servant worthy of emulation. In his continuing devotion to his fellow service members, veterans, and their families, he continues to demonstrate his commitment to a lifetime of service and paying respects to the service and sacrifice of others. Major General Eder goes on to say the following about Colonel Ice Nogle. Throughout his lifetime performance of the duty, first as an officer and then as a civilian employee, he made exceptional contributions in the U.S. Army in war and in peace, in his role as combat arms officer and as an Army public affairs professional. He continues to serve service members and their families in his continuing efforts to honor those who served. He exemplifies the best of all of us and is an incredible role model in his local community and nationally. The list of Larry's accomplishments and duties during his career is long. He began as an armor officer, but much of his public service was spent as a public affairs officer. He led the defense media pool during the Desert Storm and ultimately served in that capacity for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He has also served in Germany, in the Balkans, among other places, and finally with the Defense Information School at Fort Meade, Maryland, where he developed and led all initiatives for the joint training of the DoD journalists, public affairs practitioners, broadcasters, and broadcast engineers, photographers, graphic artists, and combat camera personnel. After his retirement in 2000 from a 30-year career in the U.S. Army, Larry served as a civilian in other public affairs roles with his final assignment as PAO for the Army's Fire Center of Excellence at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, finally retiring in 2012. Music has always been a big part of Larry's life, and since 2012, Larry has used his musical talents in various ways. He has sung with church choirs and has joined several quartets. Locally, he and a group of high school friends formed the Choir Boys and performed it several years at the Arthur High School Alumni Banquet and at churches in the area. He has also been a part of several quartets wherever he and his wife Mary were living and became a member internationally of Masters of Harmony after moving to California a few years ago. That group performed in Normandy in 2024 in honor of the 80th anniversary of D-Day. In 2014, Larry joined the Bugles Across America, which is a nonprofit organization founded in 2000. In that year, Congress passed legislation stating that veterans have the right to have two service representatives at their funeral to fold the flag and sound taps on a recording. However, the organization felt that our veterans deserve the honor of having taps played by a live bugler, and now there are nearly 4,000 volunteer musicians across the country. As of this date, Larry has served veterans and their families at close to 3,400 funerals, memorial services, and other ceremonies. Larry has mentioned many times that it is the greatest honor of my life to be able to perform this service. Last November, Larry was honored by his alma mater, the University of Iowa, where he played trumpet in the marching band during a football game as Military Hero of the Game. He was recognized as an outstanding alumni for both his military service and his service following his military career. One last note about the Major General who nominated Colonel Ice Nogle. She noted that he was her boss in the U.S. European Command in 1997. He was the Deputy Director of Public Affairs, and I was his Army Reserve counterpart. He is my military hero and role model. The next article, the latest breast cancer screening recommendations. Healthcare screenings save untold numbers of lives each year. Screenings can uncover potentially life-threatening issues in their infancy, such is often the case with cancer screenings, which are recommended to adults from all walks of life in an effort to detect the presence of disease in its earliest, most treatable stages. Screening can detect various forms of cancer, including breast cancer. Breast cancer screening guidelines are fluid as researchers and other healthcare professionals learn more about the disease. The following guidelines reflect recommendations of the United States Preventive Service Task Force. Women are now advised to start regular mammograms at 40. Prior to these updated USPSTF recommendations, women had been advised to start regular mammograms at age 50. but the Breast Cancer Research Foundation notes that these new guidelines now align with recommendations from other organizations. Screening mammograms should be scheduled every other year between the ages of 40 and 74. This timeline does not align with other organizations, many of which urge women to get annual mammograms. Women can discuss mammogram frequency with their physicians. This update cited a need for more research into the benefits of breast ultrasound and MRI for women with dense breasts. Women identified as having dense breasts can open a dialogue with their physicians about breast cancer screenings and request updates on the latest opinions surrounding the breast ultrasounds and MRIs. The USPSTF acknowledged it was unable to make specific recommendations regarding breast cancer screenings for women 75 and older, citing a lack of sufficient studies on which to base recommendations to women in this age group. It's important to note that USPSTF recommendations are fluid and can change. Women are urged to take USPSTF recommendations and other advice from or other organizations into consideration and work in concert with their healthcare team to identify the best screening strategy for them. More information about breast cancer screening is available at bcrf.org. Digital and 3D mammography at Kirby Medical Center. Kirby Medical Center is committed to excellent patient care. Our Women's Imaging Center is pleased to announce we now offer the newest innovation in screening mammography, genius 3D mammography known as breast tomosynthesis. Introducing holistic 3D mammography. 3D mammography is an advanced screening and diagnostic tool which provides images of the breast in 1 millimeter layers from many different angles, detecting abnormalities in greater detail with more accuracy to improve chances of early detection. The benefits of 3D mammography: more precise imaging for earlier detection, detects 41% more invasive cancers, fewer callbacks for additional imaging, and significant reduction in false positive recall rates. Why choose 3D mammography? The breast is composed of numerous different structures. Digital mammography offers terrific 2D view of the breast, but 3D imaging provides a much better look at the milk ducts, blood vessels, fat, and ligaments. In a 2D scan, these structures overlap and make it difficult to pick out abnormalities. Even skilled and experienced doctors can have a difficult time deciphering an overlap from an abnormality, often leading to callback patients for another screening to confirm a diagnosis. 3D mammography has made it much easier to differentiate overlaps from abnormalities. With a more detailed picture, doctors can diagnose or clear a patient of breast cancer much faster. What to expect during a 3D mammogram? From the patient's point of view, the 3D mammogram procedure is the same as traditional mammogram with no additional compression. Like in a traditional mammogram, the technologist positions you and compresses your breasts. The X-ray arm of the mammography simply moves in an arc over the breast, taking a series of images at different angles. The whole procedure takes about the same time as a traditional mammogram. 2D, 3D, which option is best for you? The exposure to radiation from traditional mammogram and 3D mammogram is comparable. Kirby offers both 2D and 3D technologies. Talk to your doctor to decide which option is best for you. For more information about Genus 3D mammography, digital mammography, or to call or schedule an appointment, call 217-762-1714. And did you know? A 2024 report from the International Agency for Research on Cancer indicated 71% of new cases of breast cancer across the globe were diagnosed in individuals age 50 and older. Though age is a known risk factor for various types of cancer, it's important that women recognize a significant percentage of breast cancer diagnoses in many parts of the world are made in women younger than 50. For example, nearly 1 in 5 breast cancer diagnoses in both North America, 18%, and Europe, 19%, are made in women younger than 50, while almost half of all breast cancers in Africa, 47%, are diagnosed in women who have not yet reached their 50th birthday. Though such figures are affected by numbers of variables, including the accessibility of screening procedures like mammograms, they speak to the reality that breast cancer can affect women at any age, a notion that underscores the significance of screening and the need to support efforts to make it more accessible in every corner of the globe. We have time for some of the columns. Pretty Illusions Led to the Life of Riley by Ramblin' Man David Porter. My wife and I must be living the life of Riley, evidenced by the fact that several of our recent home improvements really have no functionality. It's one thing to spend money on things we don't need, but it feels almost naughty to spend on things that have no practical use. The biggest addition is a backyard pergola. It's pretty. We like it. It does nothing. I think it was my wife's idea, though let's not cast aspersions. I was 100% on board with it. I had suggested that I thought we could use our patio more if we made it nicer. I like being outside when the weather is nice, but the small concrete pad that we had was not terribly inviting. In the middle of that was a rusting fire pit that could fit right in with any junkyard decor. Adjacent to the pad, behind the house, was a strip of yard where no grass would grow. We extended the patio and continued the tile down to the barren path. At least for now, it looks barren on purpose. We had a classic pergola built in the middle of the yard. It's basically four posts with slats running overhead, giving the appearance of a room, albeit a room with no walls or roof. The slats feel like a ceiling, but they don't keep out the elements. It's supposed to provide some shade, but the thin slats are about a foot apart, so unless you're 1 inch wide, you're going to get some sun. There are a couple of large trees that provide a canopy, but that shade was there before the pergola. We got rid of my trusty, rusty fire pit and replaced it with a fancy schmancy gas fire pit. No chopping wood, no putrid smoke, and no cleanup, but also not a lot of character. The fire pit, like the pergola, has little functionality. Unless you're standing right next to it, you don't feel much heat from the 50,000 BTUs it's putting out, but it's pretty. We can sit outside under the dim solar light that add warm glow and watch the flames flicker. And when we're ready to go inside, we just push a couple of buttons, turn a couple of knobs, and we're done. Easy peasy mac and cheesy. You thought I was going to say lemon squeezy, didn't you? We've also added several trees to the yard. Rather than several trees, several trees have added themselves. Over the past 10 years, several evergreens have sprouted up along our back fence. They're now over 7 feet tall and growing. Their placement was pretty good, so we just let them grow. We're fond of letting Mother Nature make her own decisions, and it fit well with my personal objective to spend no money and do no work. With the pergola, I have a place to sit and look at the free-range trees that I don't need to chop down for firewood. Before, I could have put my chair in the yard and done the same thing, but I don't know, the pergola is just cozier. It's a carefree life, but who am I kidding? I get paid to sit in my chair and write down whatever I'm thinking. I've always had the life of Riley. If you don't get rich in this business, but you define rich. If you measure wealth by happiness and contentment, I've made it. Another article, Saving a Life, So There I Was, by Pete Buckley. So my wife are seated in a booth at a local restaurant. It's a typical small family restaurant, brightly lit with one large dining area adjacent to a lengthy bar. On the wall behind the bar is a huge range of TV screens displaying various sporting events. The place was packed. It was a bit noisy. Our food order had just been delivered by our overworked waitress when suddenly the sound of a woman pierced the noise of the clinking dishes and hundreds of people talking, eating, and laughing. The words, "Somebody please, my daughter is choking," was heard throughout the restaurant. Every single person turned toward the voice, and before you could say Heimlich maneuver, a 60-year-old giant of a man with a snow-white hair and a matching goatee had the choking victim, a 5-year-old girl, in his bear-like arms. The rescue was over 6 feet tall, 250 pounds, wearing glasses, and he'd been seated at the table located next to the choking victim. Mr. Goatee never hesitated in taking action. The entire restaurant was silent, and it seemed as if every person was holding their breath, watching, and silently praying. The little girl was easily lifted off her feet as Mr. Goatee wrapped his arms around her waist and rhythmically pressed his hand inward and upward from her navel. Once, twice, three, four times, and suddenly it was over. Although I didn't see the food item leave her throat, the giant rescuer released the girl to her mother, and the mother held the daughter in her arms tightly as the rescuer returned to his table with applause echoing throughout the restaurant. The little girl's mother whispered something to the hero, and eventually the restaurant returned to normal. Once again, the wall of televisions drew the attention of the restaurant patrons, and people went back to their meals and conversation, likely centered about what they had just seen, a life being saved. I was amazed at the heroic action by this bystander had taken. He'd acted so fast and with such confidence as if he performed the Heimlich maneuver dozens of times each day. As my wife and I left the restaurant, I just had to stop by Mr. Goatee and shake his hand and tell him how much I admired him for his life-saving action. He had the largest smile on his face as he told me, "You know, I've trained for this my whole life." I didn't want to take up any more of his time, so I didn't ask him any questions, but I imagine he was a retired firefighter, paramedic, or perhaps a police officer who had learned the Heimlich maneuver as part of their training. All I know is that the restaurant customers and myself should have thrown him on our shoulders and paraded him through the town. He saved a life. And time for a few briefs. ALAH FFA Alumni Pork Burger Chop Dinner. Starting at 4:30 p.m. on Friday, October 10th, until sold out, the ALAH FFA alumni will be having their pork burger, pork sandwich dinner at the Arthur Women's Club stand at the Moultrie County Douglas Fairgrounds, or at the Knights football game that evening. Free will donation proceeds will go to benefit the ALAH FFA program. Come out and enjoy a great meal and support the FFA along with the Knights football team. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerke. Say goodbye and see you again next week.